Hello, friends. This is the Huga Nurse Podcast, where we discuss things that you can do today to improve your health by being intentional about what is in your home and in your environment. I am Rachel Zimmer. I'm a nurse practitioner and a researcher whose work centers around food as medicine and health equity programs. I am also the owner of Huga Abode. It's an online business that supports women makers worldwide. So if you're a working woman, this episode is for you today. I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Allison Matthews. She's a good friend of mine and also the co-founder of Second Shift Playbook. Today, she's going to share the inspiration behind Second Shift Playbook and the concept of Second Shift, which we discuss as the extra labor and work that women often have to take on at home. So Dr. Matthews talks today about the importance of self-care, setting boundaries, and even the value of delegating tasks and building a team. She highlights the need for a holistic approach to wellness and the importance of creating a supportive community. So join me today and learn how to build some healthy practices into your daily life. So welcome to the Huga Nurse Podcast. And today I have a really good friend of mine, Dr. Allison Matthews. She is the co-founder of Second Shift Playbook. You want to say hello?
Hey, everybody. Happy to be here.
All right. Thank you for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you today. So I've learned a lot from Dr. Matthews over the years. We became friends and I've been excited to have her on the podcast. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what your passions are and why you started Second Shift Playbook. So let's start with that. What are you passionate about? What is something that, you know, drives you and what led you to starting Second Shift?
Oh, goodness. I have so many passions, and that may be a challenge, I think, for me in some ways, because it can be hard for me to focus. But I would say at the core, my passions are about equity and making sure that people who are marginalized in communities have a voice and that our stories are told and that we are fighting for a place, a better place in this world. And so I think every project that I take on has in some way that at the core of it. So the inspiration behind Second Shift Playbook really emerged over, I would say, about a year of conversation with Charlene. Charlene actually interviewed me for a job. That's how I met her. We had a mutual friend slash colleague who recommended me to apply for the position. I applied and then they interviewed me and then I decided not to take the job. But she was like, "I'm just so impressed with you. I just want to keep in touch with you and we're going to work together somehow." And I was like, "Really? Okay." And so she kept that promise and I kept the promise to keep in touch with her and just try to figure out what other ways that we could work together. And so we just continued to have conversation, trying to like tell our stories. And we learned that we both went to all girls high schools. We both went to UNC Chapel Hill. We're both Deltas. And we both really care about making this world a better place and addressing inequality. And so, and then we're also, of course, both women and thinking about, you know, that as a common ground. Also, the idea, the concept behind Second Shift actually comes from Arlie Hochschild, who is a sociologist who I studied. My original interest was in sociology of emotions. And Arlie Hochschild did some studies with women who were working as well as coming home to their family and their home responsibilities. And she interviewed them and did observations with them and described their experience of having to work full-time jobs and then come home and start literally a second shift of work at home with the labor that is involved in that. And this was done in the 80s and early 90s. So men at that time were not very involved in home life and they kind of just let the woman do all of the work. And so she came up with this concept of the second shift. So I was like, well, why not talk about this, like this extra labor, this extra work, even though I don't have children, you know, I take care of my cousins. I help with my parents. And, you know, just there's a lot of home responsibilities that I still have to manage, even if I don't have children and I'm not married. So I felt like that was something that a concept that really resonated with women of all walks of life.
Yeah, I really love that. So the common denominator, and you're talking about Dr. Charlene Green. She's a physician, right? She's still practicing?
Yes. No, she's a retired anesthesiologist. So she's amazing. And she comes with her own kind of legacy of and name recognition, being involved in politics and policy change, because she was the chairman of the super PAC for the American Anesthesiologist Association.
Wow. So
she's very, very involved in politics and advocating for social justice. And she's like, I don't hold anything back. I go tell the governor, you need to do better. And I'm like, wow. So she's a powerhouse.
You guys are a perfect pair. So yeah. Really advocating for empowering women. This is really what this is about.
Absolutely.
What are some things that you guys are finding now that you've started this business that women are saying that they're struggling with? What are some things that you've seen?
I would say that everybody is stressed out. Everybody's burned out. And even women, I would say the majority of the women that we work with are in positions that are well-paid and they are passionate about their professions, but they oftentimes are undervalued in those professions, or they have people who are microaggressors as well as micromanagers. Mm. And, you know, not really trusting the expertise and the independence of the women. I think also trying to juggle just all these different responsibilities and also pour into yourself has been a challenge for most of the women that I have worked with. And then I think some of that stress and that constant juggling is juxtaposed to their constant kind of desire to accomplish mm-hmm. and to want to do all the things and be and start their own businesses and things like that. And so it's like you're juggling all of these things, all these stressors, these microaggressions, and oftentimes because of the microaggressions and the micromanagement, they want to start their own business. Like it's a coping mechanism for them.
Oh, I feel like I can relate to this. Yeah. Yes.
So you're one of them, but you're not the only one. I think that's something that I do too, right? It's our creative outlet. It's our way of escape. And ideally, you know, we'd be able to make our business our full-time job at some point. So,
yeah. Yeah. I feel that because I think sometimes, especially being a woman and being in a position where you have influence, that's what you wanted, right? Like you want to have influence, you want to make change that's positive in the world. And sometimes it can feel really hard when those limitations are kind of piled on. And then you realize all of a sudden, wait, it's not just a ceiling. It's like a cement block up there.
Yeah.
And so then I think to your point, a lot of professional women are like, well, my voice is getting stifled. I need a space for that. I need a space for that outlet. And like any valve, it's going to release somewhere. So I think that's what you're explaining, right?
Yeah. I've gotten to the point though, even though I actually manage two businesses. I have a full-time job and I am involved in several boards and I sing in the choir and all these things, right? And I think COVID, the pandemic has really taught me the value of slowing down. And even during the pandemic, I was very stressed because both you and I were like responding to immediate crises in the community and trying to distribute thousands of masks and all this stuff. But even during that time, I felt like there was an opportunity to slow down and to cut out things that were not necessary. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once people started going back outside again, I started to pick up all these responsibilities again. And I'm like, wait, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this anymore.
That's really true. I remember, you know, I talked about like feeling burned out during the pandemic, but you're right. I mean, we were choosing to do things that we felt like were being really impactful, like distributing masks to help people,
right,
like food to help people. But what started happening is all the busy work started coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had this like, you know, oh, I'm doing all this and stuff that I deem important that's already keeping me busy. And then you're adding things right back in again. And you're right. There were opportunities to slow down and then somehow they disappeared.
Mm-hmm. So now I have to be very intentional about I actually made a list of all the responsibilities, all the board memberships, all the things that I do. And I went down and I started quitting things.
Yeah. Talk about that process, because I'm sure someone else might need to hear how to do that.
Yeah. So I mostly made a list of unpaid work that I'm doing. So it was focused on the volunteer work and the board memberships and all that. And I think I also am a strong proponent of creating space for the things that I want in my life. And I want peace. That is the theme that I have for this year for me. I don't really do resolutions, but I have a theme for myself, and peace was the one. Mm-hmm. And so part of that process was creating a list. And then I said, okay, which ones do I get paid for? So I prioritized those. And then I also went through and thought about which ones are not that heavy a lift, or, you know, I may meet with them quarterly or something. Okay, I think it's okay. I can keep those on because it's not that much. And then I thought about the ones that, like, I'm in constant meetings and I'm talking to people on the committees outside of the meetings, and then they want to debrief about the thing, and then they want you to do all this stuff. And I'm just like, y'all are causing me stress and I'm not getting paid for this. And we're not really, the thing is, they weren't making an impact, right? And so at the core, what is my passion? My passion is to make an impact and to advocate for people and to make a change in this world. And if I'm on this commission or this committee or this group and they're not, they just keep talking to themselves in circles, then it's a waste of my time and my energy. And so I just sent my emails in and quit. And then, you know, the irony is, of course, they ask you to do all these things, right? And then when you send an email saying you quit, then they're like, either no response, or it was just like, all right, thanks.
Wow.
You know, so I'm like, yeah. I really needed to just leave.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're reminding me, I have a mentorship team, and we had a meeting last week, and they told me to write my mission statement. And if it didn't fit inside of your mission statement, if what you were being asked was not fitting inside of your mission statement, then reassess, right?
Like, that's good.
Yeah. Right. Like, so what is your mission statement? And then that should be your true north. And I really, you know, I'm in my 40s and I had never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
I was like, someone should have told me that 20 years ago.
Well, I think the other part of it, and I learned this actually when I was in graduate school, a big strategy that I use is to fill up my calendar first with my personal goals. Mm. So my exercise, my eating healthy, my vacations, my nap times, just, you know, time with my family. I put those on my calendar first. Mm. And then I think about what my professional goals are and my mission or whatever. And then I add those in and then I start taking things away. Right. But I double the amount of time that I estimate that I think it will take for me to accomplish the goals that I want, so that it makes it a little bit more realistic, because a lot of times we underestimate how much time it will take for us to do things.
Right.
And then we feel overwhelmed because we can't accomplish the thing that we want. But if you actually overestimate, then if you finish in a shorter amount of time, then you have extra time in your schedule. So that's a trick. I actually went through a workshop in graduate school from someone who taught us how to do that. And I've implemented it and it's been successful in my life. And I've always met my milestones. I've always met my goals through that type of strategy.
I love that strategy because then you can actually build your schedule around what you value.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it helps you push out what was lower on your priority list. That's, mm-hmm. that's a great strategy. I'm going to start using that.
Good.
So that actually kind of leads into the question that I had around balancing the demands of being an entrepreneur, someone who's working full time. You said two businesses working. So one way that you're prioritizing your self-care is the scheduling. Are there other things that you're doing?
Delegating. So, you know, I think especially, so this is not necessarily advice that would apply to people who don't have a high income. And I acknowledge that and I honor that, right? But for people who are in the middle to high income bracket, professional women like ourselves, we have discretionary income, right? And so I delegate tasks and things that I don't have time or the energy to do. And I also create a team for myself. So one of the things that we're doing with Second Shift Playbook is actually paying a marketing coach, a business coach, to help us grow and to be strategic about our growth. And so I have I'm paying a mentor basically.
Right.
I have assistants for both companies, for Second Shift Playbook, as well as for Community Expert Solutions. And then we have co-founders who are also doing the work. So there's no way that I'd be able to accomplish any of this work by myself. So that's a big thing. And then also part of that training that I did in grad school was about hiring people to do things for you, right? So if you have money, pay somebody to bring your groceries to you, pay somebody to come clean your house, pay somebody to, you know, manage your schedule. If those are the things that are causing you stress and you can take it off and put it on someone else to help you with, do it. Because at the end of the day, you're really kind of losing money, right? And losing sanity, because otherwise, you know, and I actually saw an interview where this woman was talking about motherhood and saying that's unpaid labor. And she says she hated to say that because if you were to hire a nanny or a babysitter, you would pay that person, right? So that is not, it's work. And so, you know, I think about that, you know, even when I have children, I hope that I'll be able to be, you know, I'm saving money now so I can pay for a nanny. Like, I need that. So, I mean, I would give that advice to people. And I think also, go at your own pace with entrepreneurship. When you see things online, there's a lot of pressure to like grind it out and, you know, go hard and like quit your full-time job. You're not really serious about your entrepreneurship if you don't do XYZ. And I don't necessarily agree with that unless you're trying to like grow a $1 million business in 1 year. But most people are not trying to do that. So I would say it's okay to go at a slower pace and I think that has been helpful for me to not make costly mistakes and right. to learn from things and grow as we grow in the company. And I think the longevity of your business actually increases your credibility. So it's okay for you to be in business for 6 years and to not have grown exponentially, right? But to show that you're consistent and that you have figured out a process and that you have a team who is consistent, I think is valuable as well.
Sunny, my son, you know, he's six and they're learning about Aesop. And so we were just talking about the tortoise and the hare. So I feel like you're talking about the tortoise and the hare.
Yeah.
But to your point, I mean, and you know, we've both been in our professions you know, for, I would say probably over 30 years collectively,
mm-hmm.
you know, conservatively. And I think that's been the truth even in our careers, right? Like, it's never been, you know, a star shot or a moonshot. It's always been consistency. It's always been, you know, and I think allowing ourselves to, and I think the question too is, what is your goal, right? So when you start a business, what are you doing it for? So I think that's a really good point. Is it about being a millionaire, or were there other things that were important to you that you wanted to, you know, use a business for? So I think,
well, the first business that I started, Community Expert Solutions, didn't start because I was thinking about becoming a millionaire. It was more about, I constantly was getting requests to consult on projects. And I was like, well, I need a mechanism to bring in that money and to manage that money. And then the bigger the project, the more people I need to handle that project. So it kind of happened organically. And then now I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, I think I could, if I put the energy that I put into working for an employer into my company, then I could make it successful like I have for other, you know, I've brought in millions of dollars for other, you know, for Wake Forest University. Why can't I do that for my company? Right. So I was like, I think it's time now.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. So how would you say the journey of building your businesses of supporting other women with their self-care has influenced your own perspectives on your balance and well-being?
Well, I don't think that I am able to preach about self-care if I don't practice it myself. So I think that's, you know, I have to hold myself accountable. But part of the reason why I talk so much about self-care is because I have been through some really tough times and have seen how stress and trauma have had negative impacts on my health and my well-being. And so I'm a big advocate for it because of those experiences, I was forced to take care of myself, right? And to, like, for example, I had very severe migraines. I actually still get them, but not as often. And it required me to change my diet, to start drinking water more, to exercise, to improve my sleep, to stop drinking alcohol. Like, it required me to take care of myself in order to, like, this physical manifestation of stress was happening in unpredictable times, to the point where I was losing work and things like that. So I was like, okay, I have to do something different.
Yeah.
So that journey of that self journey, that self care journey, was important. But I've also noticed that so many of my friends come to me for advice, maybe because I've been through those things and they see me have gone to the other side. And so I felt like it was a good way to build a business, just because organically it's something that I and Charlene do well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think out of our pain sometimes becomes sort of the flower, right? It kind of starts to come up. And I think that's what you're describing is when you, because I think anyone can talk about self-care, but until you go through things that require you to actually do self-care, and mm-hmm. then you see, oh, the manifestation of that is something that is valuable to me, it's hard to preach it. You know, it's hard to preach it if you don't understand intimately. And so I think that brings value to what you're doing.
Well, I also believe that, you know, life is not necessarily guaranteed that it's always going to be roses, right? Everybody goes through things. And the more I talk to women, the more I realize how we all have been through things. And a lot of my friendships are, I guess, in a way, a trauma bond. And I'm like, so yeah, we need help. And we're oftentimes doing it on our own. And we also not only, so Second Shift Playbook is not just about the individual kind of coaching, but we're trying to create a community of women who are supporting each other and sharing their own knowledge and resources. And then we're going to the organizational level and doing organizational change work and consulting with companies to change their culture and to do leadership development. And then we're also doing policy work. So, you know, it's not enough to just tell an individual to change their behavior or to implement self-care if you're not also creating or changing the environment in which they're operating.
I love that you brought that up. Because I think that the self-care and wellness industry has historically done that, right? The preaching and you got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of yourself. It's your fault that you're not well, you know, but there's a, you know, as a researcher, there's a socio-ecological model.
Right. Exactly.
Is nested in the, you know, organization, is nested in the community, is nested in the politics, right? So that's how we understand, you know, an individual. On a research level. So you can't just, you can do things to take care of yourself. And that's, you know, the journaling or whatever, you know, mindfulness. Those are things that research is behind and shows that if you do these things for yourself, it does help with wellness, but that's not the totality of wellness. And so I love that you bring up the other aspects of change that need to occur for women to be able to feel like they are able to be able to care for themselves and have well-being. So I'd love for you to even talk about that a little bit more.
Well, I think that that's the difference between just being an entrepreneur who's just trying to make money and like, oh, buy my candle, et cetera, which candles are amazing. But what I'm saying is it's more than us just trying to sell a product, but we are public health practitioners. I'm a sociologist. Charlene is an MD. Right. And so we're also coming in from a perspective of wellness and wholeness that, and she's a policy advocate, right? So we're thinking about the whole picture. And we're trying to make money, but we're also trying to make change.
Right.
So, you know, it's based on a social enterprise model rather in a triple bottom line of benefiting the customer, benefiting the environment, and benefiting social impact, right? So that's the type of entrepreneurship that I'm drawn to.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, even with Hygge Abode, right? Like you see me post on Instagram about a candle, but really, where is that candle coming from?
It's right.
coming from an entrepreneur, a woman. So we're supporting women who are making things. Some are from underserved communities, some are not. But, you know, we're being very intentional about that. So it's sort of the sort of circular economy of supporting women, you know, through where you put your money. And then thinking about things about sustainability, right? I love the fact that people are actually starting to think about that, you know, that we're wasting so many things. And sometimes we'll say, well, we don't have money. But then if you really took inventory of all the things that you're buying, I mean, I even had to do that. I had to take inventory of what am I putting in my home? What am I putting in my body? You know, and when I took inventory of that and was honest, I was like, oh, no wonder I'm spending that much money, you know, and so I think that's the thing is there has to be depth to, and I think that's why I like something like podcast or long form conversations, because then you can tell that story more. And you feel like you can potentially have more of an impact.
Yeah. You know, what you just made me think about, I plan to move pretty soon or in the next few months. And I want you to help me to get rid of all of the stuff that I don't need and to think about creating, moving into a new space that is with the Hygge kind of perspective in mind. So that should be a part of your business model. I want to, but I'll be your first customer because I need your help.
and it's hard to do, right? Because we put a lot of intention around things. Sometimes we become very nostalgic and we attach the nostalgia to an item, right? And I've done that too. Like I have things that, and I really got tickled. Someone had told a story of where they were, their mom had passed away and they were cleaning out her house. And so they found these boxes that were all taped up that were under her bed. And it ended up being all of the childhood items from that child, but it was just papers like math papers, English papers.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. It was all taped up. She just held on to it because she was nostalgic about it, but it wasn't that person. It wasn't the child under the bed all taped up under there. Mm-hmm. It was just there's really just trash. And, right. Like, so sometimes we just get really attached to our things. So, and, you know, and that's the other piece of wellness too, is things don't bring happiness. We somehow have been conditioned to believe that things bring happiness, and that's just not true.
No. And just temporary. I do get a little temporary happiness from it, but not long term.
Surge.
Yeah.
It's called a dopamine surge. Yeah. And, you know, neurologically, we get a dopamine surge when we get something, and then we plateau out, and then we're looking for the next something.
Right.
So, yeah. But you're right. Yeah. For a second.
Yeah.
I feel it. I feel it. That's why it's a thing. So what resources do you recommend? Like, what are things that you're listening to or reading right now that's been really influential for you?
I am currently listening to Emotional Intelligence Habits, which is a book that focuses on, I think it's, some of it is emotional wellness, but it's, a lot of it is about boundary setting and our, you know, understanding and navigating engagement with toxic people and how to, put them in their place respectfully, and then to protect yourself, to understand how to connect with people, how to better communicate, how to take care of yourself. So it's like kind of a holistic approach.
Yeah.
The other book I'm listening to right now is, it's on Audible. So I listen to Audible. I listen to a lot of Audible books, and the one I'm, Pleasure Activism.
Oh, that's interesting.
Two opposite, but maybe somewhat connected. So Pleasure Activism is about, it's actually this professor, I want to say she's at Duke, but she talks about the beauty of pleasure and pleasure in our life and incorporating pleasure in every aspect. Hmm. And some of it is sexual pleasure, but the other parts of it are like emotional connection, as well as like kind of creating peace and space in your life for pleasure, pleasurable foods and visual pleasure, as well as kind of that intimacy that you can build with a partner. So I like that it's, the idea is not just about sex, but it also is very empowering to think about sex in a pleasurable way,
right,
and not just about the act, but the connection with your partner and with yourself and your body.
Right. That's, that connection is so important. Oh, I love that. Those are great resources. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Do you have any favorite podcasts?
So I listen to Morgan DeBond, who is a Black entrepreneur, Black female entrepreneur who started Blavity in Afrotech. And she talks about, she's now a new mother. So she talks about, you know, her life as an entrepreneur, and she gives tips on how to navigate the entrepreneurial journey. And then I'm also listening to Minimalism, the Minimalism podcast.
Oh, favorite.
Yeah. And then I listened to Jay Shetty, who recently got in trouble about something, I don't know, some plagiarism stuff, but I really like him either way. But Jay Shetty talks about, it's kind of like the emotional intelligence, like how to navigate toxic people, how to integrate wellness and mindfulness into your life.
Right. I love all of those. Thank you. So do you have any advice that you want to share with these listeners?
I think it's important for you to continue to educate yourself and to not stay stagnant. A lot of people are trying to figure out, you know, how are you doing all these things? And I would say I'm a constant learner. So, you know, I have a goal of peace in my life, and some of that is to learn how to do that. You can't just, you don't always inherently know how to do these things. So I think using the resources that I have at my discretion, the people that I have at my discretion, my support system, building out a team, all of those things are what are contributing to my peace. And being unapologetic about setting boundaries. So mm-hmm. I think that's also, but not being a passive aggressive about it. I would give people the advice to, you know, it's always easy to say, oh, just tell them no. No is a complete sentence. And that is true, but I think it's very hard for people to do that. And so I would suggest listening to or reading Emotional Intelligence Habits, because it actually gives you some talking points and helps you practice how to set boundaries and how to create more peace in your life. So I would say prioritize yourself and your community and your wellness mm-hmm. And your peace.
Yeah.
And then everything else will come from that, because I think that you will create a space that attracts yeah. positivity and abundance and live in abundance with an abundance mindset. So that's the last one I want to give, is operating with an abundance mindset is important, because a lot of people don't believe that they deserve good things in their life, or they deserve to be paid money for their expertise or for the work that they do,
right.
or that the opportunity and the dream that they've always had will come to them. And I've always operated from an abundance mindset that I'm just going to do the work. I'm going to follow God's path, and I believe that it will come to me.
I love that. Almost like manifesting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually do that a lot. I think we're similar in that way, where I find that I'm not one to second guess myself. I just say, you know what? I think I see that I want to go over there, and I'm just going to figure out how to get there along yeah. the way. And that's okay, because I'm going to trip maybe 50 times, but I'm still going that way.
Yeah. And it's okay to fail, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people see the work that I do and think that I've always succeeded at everything and I've always won.
Right.
But no, I have had my career and my reputation attacked. I've lost jobs. I have not been hired for jobs. I have not gotten fellowships. There's a lot of, I've had toxic romantic relationships. I've experienced domestic violence, right? Like all of these things
yeah.
have happened to me, but I continue to keep my faith in God and let God guide me. I continue to use my support system, and I don't hide behind or let those negative things keep me down. I actually use them as lessons to learn and to continue to grow.
Yeah, I love that. And that's what you have to do, right? It's lessons to grow.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I found that in my life too. I've gone through a lot of things. But then you come out on the other side of it. You either come out bitter or you come out with a lesson. And so yeah. you can choose which way you want to come out.
You can choose. That's yeah. the key.
Yeah. I love that. All right. So last question. Looking back on your journey, what are you most proud of?
I would say that, and we haven't talked about this at all, but the majority of my career has been, working to address HIV related stigma in communities. And
yeah,
I am the most proud of when a person living with HIV calls me and says, thank you. And says, you see me. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing, because there's so many people who just do it for a paycheck or do it for accolades, but you really care. And yeah. So that, I think, is my proudest moment.
Yeah. You've done a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. And that's a really, really important part of you, too. So I can see why.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the journey with this entrepreneurial journey, like my career for the last 15, 20 years has been focused on HIV. And now mm-hmm. I'm kind of expanding beyond that. And so that's been a growth journey for me. It's been admittedly a little uncomfortable. Like, who am I without this thing that I've been doing for the past 15 years?
Right.
But you kind of learn that my skill set, my passions, my ability to reach and engage and and really connect with people is not just tied to one topic. So that's something that I've had to learn, I guess, in my journey.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you. That's a great place.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here, Allison. Thank you for being my very first guest. So
you're welcome. I really
appreciate it. This has been great. All right. Well, I think we will end here, and I'll be putting resources and some of the things that Allison mentioned in the show notes. Otherwise, I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your Cougar day. Bye.
Bye.